I, Marjorie Rudzinski, am conducting an interview with George B. Heisler of 330 West Bank Street in Albion, New York. Mr. Heisler, would you like to tell me a little bit about your history?
Well, when I was real small, I was born at Butts Road.
The Butts house is on Butts Road, just under back over the underpass on the west side. We lived in the house where that's where I was born.
And
know what you want.
When were you born?
1889.
Okay. What was your father's name?
Bert Heisler.
Where was he born?
In Bavaria, Germany.
Oh, yes. His occupation?
Well, he come to this country. His father, if I can go way back where he wants.
Oh, yes.
His uncle, his mother, his father passed away. And his uncle, he was living with his mother got married again, and he couldn't get along very good with his stepfather, so his uncle gave him money and said, you go to the United States, he says, you can make something of yourself. So he come to this country, and he started in cutting marble.
Oh, yes,
stone cutter, see.
That was his.
And cutting statues and gravestones and lettering and all that stuff. And then later on, he stayed in Albion. He was in Rochester there. And he went to, he went around to these quarries and cut stone. And then he cut stone for the Catholic school. They cut them pillars there, him and Michael Herron. Both worked on them. They cut two columns. And then he, then he cut the stone for the school on here, the high school on Bank Street. He cut the cornerstone for that and done the other work there. And he cut stone for the Catholic school that did. And
I think you mentioned something about the round pillars at St. Joseph's.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. It. He cut them round pillars. Him and Michael Herron worked with him, and they cut them pillars for that.
Before he was married?
Mm-hmm. No, he was married then. He married my mother. He come here and he...
Your mother's name was?
Lillian Babcock.
All right.
Well, he started in Rochester. That's where he was. He come to Rochester.
Oh.
And he worked down there, and he learned the marble trade down there in Rochester. Cutting gravestones and lettering and all that stuff. And he always like a dude. I got a cane. He's always, Matthews said one time, he could get any girl he wanted in town. He had a little cane to show and a bamboo cane. He was always dressed up duty
style. Yes. Oh.
And then as he got older, he didn't dress up no more. Naturally, had too much to do. And but I don't know.
That was Mr. Matthews?
Mike Matthews. There were Bill and Mike. The Master boys lived out east of Albion.
Oh, yes.
Then
mm-hmm.
Then, let's see, that was before I was born.
That was before
and
you
I
were
born. And I was born at Butts Road, I think I mentioned that.
Yes.
Up there in the house, which was the Butts house, they call it.
Okay.
Then we, all of us boys, we were
how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had five brothers and four sisters.
Oh.
And, we worked in a quarry there, stone, and I got in a blacksmith shop and learned it. I was real young when I learned a blacksmith's trade, and I worked it with Mr. Diltz. He was Homer Diltz, his name was. He was.
How do you spell that?
I don't know how to spell it. I don't know. Homer Diltz.
Homer Diltz.
Very good. He lived up on the avenue, right where Francis Myers. Up there, he owned that place.
The corner of Clinton?
No, let's see.
No?
No, it wasn't. It was,
Francis.
Well, I don't suppose that he lived
no.
up on the avenue anyway.
Okay.
And I learned a trade with him when I went on my own. He didn't want me to go because he got so used to me and doing things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He'd always, had some peculiar job. He would consult me how to do it with me. It's funny, an older man than I was, but he always consulted me doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice man to work with. And he felt so broke up because I went on my own and I worked on a canal with him. And then they put me in his blacksmith. I took right over his blacksmith right there in the canal when they were working in Hawley. I'd done the blacksmith work.
Oh.
And I'd done it at the quarry. I sharpened steel before I went there. Then afterwards, I was on my own all the while, the blacksmith. Ryan's Quarry, and I was down to Carson Stone Yard.
And, Carson?
Yeah, in Rochester. They had a big stone yard. They brought the stone in the rough.
Yes.
And they cut it. They had a big yard, what they call a yard, or stone cutters around, and they had sheds. And I had a blacksmith shop, and I had to run the machinery out. They had a big Model 10. I don't know what the model was. A big air compressor plant there. I had to take care of that. To pump the air for the air tools and also for the fire.
Imagine you had to keep the tools in shape for
I had to sharpen them. They get dull from cutting stone.
See? I see.
And then they bring them in and I had to resharpen them all.
Oh, yes.
And I worked there and Doc Cooper made me get out. He said I'd get stone cutters consumption. He got after me and said get out of there. Every Sunday I'd come up, he'd get after me.
You would come to Albion on Sundays?
My wife lived.
Commuted to Rochester when you were first married.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I got a job. I know I was up here. I got a job down there. My father said he wanted a blacksmith. They couldn't find a blacksmith.
Oh, I see.
They couldn't depend on him. So I went down there.
Well, how did you drive down?
No, I rode the trolley car.
Oh, you rode on the trolley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I stayed down there, I guess, there, Rochester boarded.
I see.
To come up there every night. And let's see, I don't know what.
So Dr. Cooper wanted you to get out of there before you.
Before I'd have lung trouble. He kept after me, so I quit and come back to Albion. And he wanted me to go on a farm, and I went on a farm. I didn't know if that was necessary. And I worked on a farm, and I didn't have nothing. I worked for Ed Taylor up in the Eagle Island area.
Yes.
And I worked for him, a farmer, $35 a month. And I said, I can't go for this very long. So I had, I don't know what I did. I guess I only had the boy, I guess, then, my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I got a job. I worked like a mule. I worked on there, doing all the hard work and everything. So I come to Albion and I didn't have no coat, I didn't have nothing. I said, I gotta go back. I told Doc that I gotta go to blacksmith. I can't work, make no money working in a farmer. So I went to work and let's see where they go then. Oh yeah, that's the time I went to Rochester on the canal. I think I worked on the barge canal down there as blacksmithing for a while.
Oh, blacksmithing there. What type of
Well, it had
blacksmithing
chains. It had chains
do?
And it had drills to sharpen, you know, and chandler to cut the stone. It had went through by the what they call it aqueduct there, right? A part of railroad and light place used to be there, right up above me. The railroad and light plant. And my blacksmith shop was down there.
This was in Rochester.
Yeah, and I used to sharpen the steel for the cut a little deep in the river so to take care of the water. See, it wasn't deep enough before. So I worked there and all that job was done. And then I had a job on the canal off south of Rochester. It was a winter time. It come up in winter. So blasted cold. A great big building. They had air and everything there. I quit. I just didn't go back.
Mm-hmm.
I got to walk from the south avenue clear out to the canal in the winter. You're going up and afraid of that.
Yes.
I did it over that right in the
uh-huh.
And then see what I do after that. I get kind of mixed up what I done with Queen Eggs.
Well, you did this blacksmithing when your oldest boy was
so
that was probably 19 13 he was born.
And
by the way, you did have three children.
Yeah, I had Alvin and Rachel. They were one right after another. In 3 years, I had three children. And around 3-4 years.
Yes. And you lived
at Butts Road.
You were living in Butts Road at
that? I lived down there, see.
Ah, I see.
My family didn't go to Rochester at all, because my wife said we got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it cost too much anyway, see. We had a house there at Butts Road.
I see. Was that a farm, or was that just a homestead?
The quarry company owned the houses. It's Orleans County Syndicate. Everyone bought all the quarries up, see, and they owned it, and I lived in one of their houses. My dad lived in one, Schaefer bought the place, and he tore everything down. There were two houses. Up to the canal, there was a house there, and then there was a house we lived in, the Brady house. That was the main house. No, that was one of the bigger houses, a nice home. That's where we lived in. And we lived there for several years. And I used to take the trolley and go to Rochester. That's when I was working in Rochester. I used to get the trolley back and forth, go down, buy something there.
I see. When you got out of the blacksmithing business, you decided to go into business for yourself.
Yes, I went into blacksmith. Blacksmith business began to get tough, you know, it began to go out.
Mm-hmm.
And export. He was selling Case tractors and stuff. He used to be the sheriff. His name was Ike Schwartz. And I repaired Case machinery for him, tractors and stuff. And worked for a while. And what the heck did I do then? I started in my collision shop, I think, then.
That was about 19.
I started in the garage.
Yes.
And then I don't know what the heck year that was.
It was before the Depression.
Yeah. Well, I guess it was around Depression time or something. I know things pretty tough. Anyway, excuse me. I worked for Ike, and then he wanted somebody to work for me. I was, come and got me. And I wanted to know if I wanted to work for him. We lived in Butts Road. So I went up and took care of Case tractors and bean spray rigs and stuff. I'd all run all around monkeying with another thing. I even went as far as Buffalo. And I got sick of that running around, and then the Larwood, he got me to do some service work for him. And then
who
I
was
started.
That, Ed Larwood?
John Larwood. They're passed away now, and mm-hmm. all gone, the Larwoods are. And and I started, I left Ike Schwartz, let's see what I do. I started picking up, I got sick of the collision work, working on them tractors, you know, the garage work. I was working on them tractors, and getting in the grease and stuff. Then I went into the collision work. I picked that up myself, and then I done the, that's all I'd done for quite a while. I did the collision work. And I, of course, I done some service for Larwood in the meantime. Different people want things done. Mm-hmm. Get me to go. So.
And that is that
then
when
I started. I started in collision work. And
that's when you went into business for yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And I was doing the service work meantime and trying to take me out. And I had fellas working for me. Ralph Marchand worked for me. That fellow, that Frenchman, you know.
Ralph who?
Marchand.
How do you spell that?
M-A-R-C-H-A-N-D, I think, and I don't know for sure. He was a... He come with Fred Rohde. And Fred Rohde was building roads, you know. He's running the oiler. Had chartered the oiler with Fred Rohde. And so he had no place to stay. He come and wanted to come up. He got to our house. And then he come up here and stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
He lived with us till he passed away. And he made a lot of things and made around here, all roof cabins and stuff. He made.
Oh, yes.
He didn't do work anymore until he passed away. Then we buried him on our lot. And Ralph Marchand friends, they all see with a kind of a, he was all well read. He sat there and read all about the new things, how the cars come out, and when they get something new, they didn't know how to take care of it. Come and ask him, and he'd tell him what to do.
Oh.
And get information. And he used to drive the garage, had to stay there, and he'd use a different garage, and had these new transmissions and stuff come, and they'd ask him about it. And he would well read every night. He'd read about it. See.
Mm-hmm. You must have met quite a few interesting people when you were working on their cars.
Oh yes,
Mr. Heisler.
I don't know a lot of the people.
Some people. They must have been some of the more well-to-do people, because not everybody could afford an Oakland or these different.
Yeah.
Automobiles, like during 1928,
1929. Had a Franklin for a while, and that was a damn noisy. The valves, the overhead valves, making noises. I can't keep them quiet. So I was driving an old, so I forget. He got a Cadillac after a while. No Cadillacs.
Oh.
And him and I used to hunt. Oh gosh, for every chance he'd come. And if I was sick, we were so close friends and all that. If somebody, before the day was over, would tell him that they didn't come go to God or something, and find out anyway, and they'd tell him, George is sick. And he'd go, no, what's the matter? And if I had a sick headache or something, I'd stay home sometimes. I said, darn sick of headache. I would have migraine headaches,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He'd be up for a night to see how I was.
Oh.
I didn't have to call him.
You were very good friends.
Just as close as anybody could be.
I see. Could you tell me a little bit about your hunting experiences
with hunting friends?
Yeah, Dr. Cooper and he all just wanted to go hunting pheasants, or hunting, not hunting woodcock in the fall, see.
Mm-hmm.
He agreed to hunt woodcock. And
and you used dogs to hunt, flush them out?
I had our little setter I got. We didn't need a dog much, I had this little Annie, that little dog I showed a picture.
Mm-hmm.
She would find him.
What type of dog was she?
A little English setter.
Uh-huh.
She was some of Bombright's. She's a well-bred dog. She was a Tidman, of the bunch.
Yes.
And they give her to Doc Cooper, and he give her to me. I'd give Bill Bone there in Clarendon. That he was a friend of the...
Who?
Bill Bowen, he was a friend of Bombright in Rochester. He was a real estate, wasn't he in the real estate business? Yeah, he was in the real estate. He got into business real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us this little, he had the dog, Bill Bowen, did he raise these dogs?
So, I see.
And he gave this little Titman to us. A little English setter she was. He was an old puppy. He probably didn't weigh. I don't think she would, 40 pounds. A little bit of a thing. I shoot in her picture, She
yes.
Snappy. I could handle her, do anything with her, and feel motion to go anywhere.
Trained her?
Yes, I didn't have much. She was natural. She was a natural anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I just tell her to do that with my hand. If she'd weigh over to the canal, I'd do this way. Or I didn't have to keep questioning about where to go, and she would go that way, and I'd motion her in. She'd always keep looking at me, see?
Yes.
And when she's on a point, she'd wait there and hold that point, and when I'd be coming up to her, she'd see her go, smelling and look and see how I went.
Yes.
And I walked up to her.
Uh-huh.
She's a wonderful little dog.
Oh. Now, Dr. Cooper, he didn't use the dog.
Him and I used to. Well, we used around here some, but when we went down to Plaskai, the hunting part, we used to go down there every fall. And stayed at Plaskai Hotel for a whole week and hunt partridge. And we had a pretty good time down there. Len Munson would meet us. He worked selling undertaker supplies. And he would come there once in a while and hunt with us. Len Munson is down in Erie Street, or not near East.
Oh,
Street.
yes.
Yeah, he used to come down and hunt once in a while for a day or so.
Yes.
And Dr. Wilson, he used to be down there hunting ducks down in there.
What was his first name?
Who?
Dr. Wilson.
I never knew.
Oh.
From Batavia he lived.
Oh, from Batavia. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he must have passed away by this time.
What kind of guns did you hunt with?
Well, Dr. Cooper, I don't know what he did have. I never paid him enough attention to it. But I used a 16-gauge Parker, mm-hmm. double barrel. That's what I used for bird hunting. And yeah, that was a wonderful, it was so light, it had a nice. He had a 12-gauge, doctor did. I bought this, well, I went down to Waterman's Hardware. I don't know how I come to buy it.
What hardware store is that?
Waterman's Hardware at
Waterman's?
That time, years ago. I remember a year ago. And mm-hmm. I went
yes.
in there one day and I seen this gun and I bought it. And I used it all my life, a 16-gauge Parker, double barrel.
The reason I asked you about the gun was because it seems as though somebody mentioned that you did quite a bit with guns. That
yeah.
you, did you service them?
Oh, well, I done some, yes. I used to make some gun stocks, but I cut
gun
that
stocks.
Out. It's too much work. I couldn't get work all day for a cent. You could charge your time making
mm-hmm.
gun stocks. And I made Severnilla one and somebody else gun stock. I don't know, whatever. That's a number of years ago, though.
I see.
That's when I was running the garage. I used to. But I don't know
it
how I come to where I worked at the last thing.
It was
you
sort
know,
of a hobby, wasn't it, along with your
well,
hunting?
Well, it was just a favor for somebody, that's about all.
Oh.
I didn't charge them just.
Okay. Could you tell me, did you win any trophies in your hunting, or?
Well, I mostly got money, but you know, take these big
shoes.
You
belong to these
well,
sportsmen.
Again, a big gun, what the heck was it? I can't think, I used to go all over to the shoots. I forgot what the heck to call it now. Tri-County, I don't know what the Finger Lake League or what the heck it was. Anyway, we there was Medina and Albion and all these clubs used to go to these different shoots. And we used to go to Albion. There was a few were shot there, but we didn't have the. I don't think I don't know how we did do it. I guess we went just a few of the fellas like Jack McDermott. See, I got acquainted with him and Holly. And we went to these, he would go to these big shoots, like in Bradford, Pennsylvania, and in Hamilton, Ontario, in Canada. And you took up here to, yeah, Canada, I mentioned Canada, Bradford. Where the heck is it? There's several of them leagues we used to go and shoot, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was in Hamilton, Syracuse. You used to take in them big shoots.
Yes.
You shoot for 2 or 3 days there.
And you won trophies.
Yeah, I won. Well, I won the only trophy I bought in the little leagues. But they used to pay you money. See, there was Lewis class, they called it, and two different classes. And A and B and C and D, see.
Mm-hmm.
But in them shoots, you run onto a lot of them. So it was Crutchman. He's from.
What's the name?
Let's see where he was. Right, Crutchman. He comes from Canada. What is it? Hamilton, Ontario is where he comes from.
Mm-hmm.
He used to shoot there. And then there was. And fellow from Bradford, they followed the leads up all the while, them fellows would, you know, they had a lot of money. This here, Crutchman, what did he have over there? He, it's been, I heard quite a bit this boy, no, I can't think. Huh. I've forgotten what he was in, no, he, I think, I don't know if it's in the oil business or what the devil he was. I can't remember. I know he's a big shot. He had a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And this here, in Mohawk. He was from Bradford, I think he was. He's the one that had a lot of money. He come there with a lot of taste of liquor and a damn, he drunk half the time. And he would shoot. And he'd go take these big shoots all over, you know. He had a good shot, too.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you have quite a competition here, a lot of shooters, you know. And of course, they classify you A, B, and C, and D, see. When I was up there, I was in the A, but when you get AA, and they got it pretty darn good to be up in there. In the A class.
You were?
I was in the D class most of the time.
D.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A class is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Here comes Judy. I don't know what else I can tell you. I can't remember so many things. There's so damn many things I've done in my lifetime. But Doc Cooper, I told you, we used to go to class, I'd stay for a whole weekend on partridge. And when the woodcock season was open, I'd be, George, get ready, we're going hunting woodcock. He'd bring us lunch and we go hunting woodcock. So
oh,
on the
yes.
first day hunting woodcock.
Uh-huh.
When the season opened.
Yeah. Well, I'm...
Hi.
Okay.
I don't know what I was going to tell you now.
About your hunting, dude.
Oh, later years, that's when the Coyotes come in here. Maybe they don't know about that.
Who?
The Coyotes. See, we didn't know nothing about Coyotes around here at that time.
What's
Coyotes, they're Western dogs, and wilders. They call them wild dogs, but they're not. They're the Coyotes. They're out west.
Oh, yes. Okay. Coyotes, I call them.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Oh, I'd like you to tell me about that.
Les Cannon was coming up one day from down north, or one of the Cannon boys, and he come to the garage. He said, George, something went across by Rose North of Rose Harding's barn. He said, and it looked like a dog. It wasn't a dog. He said, a funny looking thing. I don't believe, he said. So I went right down that morning, it was springy here, the muddy, and I went down and looked and checked for about where he said it was. I found the mud in the tracks in the mud, see where it went across the road. So I told Bob Harling, I said, we got something to look up this fall. So we were trying to hear him howl nights, but we never got him, heard him howl at nights. So when the fall come, we went down there, and I had this major dog, and a big one. It was an old dog, it's all fat. Bob was in there, and he said, now don't let Major go. I get in there. So he let him go, and I let this Major, that's my dog, I let him go. But Dean Morton got there, and I heard the shot, and Dad brought him out. And then afterwards, we went down there, and it was back in Drew's Woods, is where this was. Back in his farm, we went in from the east back in there. And Raleigh, down in that Raleigh's Woods. And we got this big one, and then we found out that there was more. So we went back in there, and my son was with me. And this dog, as I was telling you, this Major chased him. And my son was up an old gateway up the street towards the main road. And I got the one went across and run right into him, and he got that. But as I said before, Bob got the old one, the old dog in the woods. And then Clyde Ferris, he was hunting with us, and he went down north to the big creek there, and chased him down by Shores. Used to be an old slaughterhouse down there, a bunch of Shores, I guess they called it, that name. I don't know, Shore or something. And
yes.
I don't know what it was, Shore. He was on a slaughterhouse down there.
Oh.
Down north.
Mm-hmm.
And, this here, the Coyote, the dog ran it and ran across the road, and Clyde was across the big creek, you know. I mean, oh, down when that come up that creek, and he shot it. And he got that one. And then afterwards, who the heck got another one? Clyde Ferris. Then my son got one, but I can mention that, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Homer.
Yeah. And well, it was I guess that's about it. And we stopped hunting them. And now down there, they don't know it, but that whole north is full of coyotes down north of the ridge.
It is now.
So there's nothing to kill them off. What can happen to them? Nobody hunts them. They must be down there, a lot of them down there.
Oh, yes.
They breed like dogs. We sure didn't kill them off.
Me, not being a hunter, Mr. Heisler, how, why did you kill them? Did you kill them for a bounty?
Well, no, they put a bounty on them because they claimed that they were afraid they were killing the sheep. Then they put a bounty on them.
Oh, yes.
And we were getting them. And this other deal come up, this bounty business. And we never could get, we were lucky if he got one at a time. And one day, there were some fellas up, I won't mention names, there was up barrier somewhere. They must have went out west and got some coyotes, because come up one morning and they said they got 3 coyotes all at once. They shot them across the creek down in there, which was, didn't make sense to me, see. And it was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So they paid him a $300 bounty on them coyotes,
oh,
and they cut they got.
Oh, because it brought them
and
from the west.
And we never got none for hunting for free.
Oh.
We hunted for the sport of it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, what a funny deal. And we got over that. Ed Hildebrecht, I knew he was hunting with me a little bit.
Oh,
and
yes.
He figured it out. He said he said they even showed collar marks on them. Where they had a collar on them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need even bother, but you got a few dudes. I don't know anything else. I don't know what.
Could you tell me, Mr. Heisler, going way back, could you tell me anything about your school days? And what did you have to walk to school, and how far did you have to go?
I didn't go down to Butts Road or there, but.
What schoolhouse did you attend?
Rudd's Corners.
Rudd's Corners?
Yeah, Rudd's Corners School. My brothers went, but I didn't go. I had to work.
Uh-huh. You didn't go?
No, I didn't go. I never had much of a chance to go to school.
Your older brothers went?
Yeah, next to me and younger.
Uh-huh. I wondered if you could recall some of your home life when you were a youngster. For instance, what kind of chores you had to do and what kind of recreation you had?
Oh, I used to... My main recreation was hunting and fishing.
How about your fishing?
Well, I never fished too much until later years, so... I married my wife. We used to fish a little bit. We never got one. It was mostly hunting. I'd go out hunting woodchucks. And John Duke Cooper and I used to go hunting, later years, hunting woodcock, or woodchucks on Sundays, you know. He had a rifle and I had a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers wanted to come out and come to kill the woodchucks because they were eating their beans up. So we used to go up for the fun of it.
What did you do for fun in the winter time with your brothers and sisters? You recall anything about that?
No. They didn't want to go with me, my brothers. They didn't like the outdoor life like I did. I'd make them homemade skis and go cross country all alone and fool around that way.
Oh, homemade skis.
Yeah, I'd make my own skis.
How did you make those?
Out of an old piece of white pine and put a tin on the front and the metal on them, and I'd go from Butts Road up to the, up through Hartswood and through Hartswood and up around, go around the country skiing, all by myself.
That must have been quite an invention, those skis, with a tin.
No, they were just a white pine board.
White pine.
Match lumber, and I put a piece of tin on the block of wood so that it wouldn't bend, stick in the snow.
Yes.
I had them strapped and all strapped. It didn't work too hot, but I used to have a lot of fun on them.
Oh, yes.
But I'd done a lot of trapping when I was a kid. I used to go up to Hartswood and trap. I had a One time we was out there, we go up the Harts Woods, and there were a lot of little skunks, and I see them, and they were cute, so mm-hmm. I caught them. We lived on Temperance Street then, and I got the little skunks and had them under the front steps in the box. And I was always catching something alive and having around, so Mother said, "You got some skunk." And oh, I lied to her. She said, "You have to." She knew me. She went, "Did you let them things go?" So I had to let them little skunks go.
Oh, yes.
Then I had woodchuck in the box.
Uh-huh.
Mrs. George Bidwell lived next to us. Mother and her was all talking one day, and they says, said, "Lil, what's that?" My mother's name was Lil. And he said, "Lil, what is that?" Mrs. George Bidwell said, and she said, "Oh, that's some of the thing George had in a box in the barn, I guess, or in a cage." And then my Uncle Mike, one time, he was...
Who?
My Uncle Mike O'Hearn.
Yes. Oh, he's your uncle.
I went up there. He had to take the horses up. But he had a Democrat wagon, and he had a nice, or trotting horse stuff there, lively horses. I used to take that, drive it up there. And I got a big mud turtle, and I put him under the Democrat in the back seat in the bag, see.
Yes.
And I got him. We just got going. We come by the creek there, just as we got by that creek. My Uncle Mike jumped over the jumped out. He scared to death. This mud turtle come crawling out between his legs.
Oh.
Dad, get me help. Put the thing in there.
Oh.
He threw my mud turtle in the creek.
Uh-huh.
Big snapping turtle.
Yes.
And then we had pet crows.
Uh-huh.
Oh, later years, we always had a pet crow around here. We had one. And the girl used to have a lot of talk to him, and he'd step right fly down there, they taught him to say, "Awa, awa," that was the name, it's Nanny on it. He would say, "This is plain," and he would, and then like Alda, my daughter's name, he'd say, "Alda, Alda," he'd say, "Alda," you know.
Yes.
And he'd go over to Chet Bartlett, who was in his house over there, his postmaster. He'd go over to his bedroom window. He'd call him over, you know, and then he'd go over there for a wee-up, and he'd go over there and put Chet and Chet and feed him every morning up there in the window, and he'd muck in with a crow. But every crow I had, I don't know what happened. I always thought that somebody poisoned him after a while, because they would like to drool at the mouse, and then he'd die. Mm. So we had several pet crows. Mm-hmm. We had one down the Butts Road when I was a kid, a pet crow.
Mm-hmm.
And he was around there when chickens were singing, you know. He got so ready going, "Ka, ka, ka, ka," just like the chickens. Singing like the chickens.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd walking back on the wheelbar handle, and he'd go back and forth and crook his neck and shrug and sing like a hen chicken.
Yes.
Like a hen, a laying hen would be. That same ka, 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 singing way, you know.
Mr. Heisler, during your lifetime, what type of changes have you noted in Orleans County?
Well, I noticed the blacksmith trade one night about went out with a bang.
Yes.
Just quit quick. And I didn't remember the... Well, I remember the horse and buggy days, and the first automobile I knew, Doc Wage had it.
Oh, Doc Wage.
Yeah, he had one with a straight handle, and it wasn't a steering wheel, it was just a handle that pushed back and forth. And it was like a little, it was more than like a little buggy or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked up for Doc Sutton in his office as a kid, you know, if he was out, when I'd go up there and
take care of the fire, stay at the office.
And one day I went, I set the fire come on, and I turned the fire and forgot to shut it off. And I come before he did, and it was hot in the drawer, and it was hot in the bake oven. And see, I opened up all the windows and got it cooled down before he come.
Oh, could have set the place on fire.
I used to take care of his horses, Dr. Sutton's horses.
Uh-huh.
And I remember Doc, I was out one time, and I went to Doc Wade to get some pills for the cold, see. I had an awful cold.
Mm-hmm. And I went out hunting just the same, and I got over there and lost my field in a hole. I don't know whether it was a rabbit we were running, or I think it was a rabbit. And rolled in the hole, and I couldn't get him. I went back for some more pedals. He said, they won't do you any good in a rabbit hole. He says, he gave me some more pedals. And then when they all, the flu epidemic, that was something, my wife got it, Alice's mother, she had the flu, and he said to me, how do you feel? Oh, I said, my back aches a little bit. He said, well, you got it too.
Oh, yes.
Last day.
There were quite a few deaths during that epidemic. Yeah. About 1919.
I can't remember. As far as dates, I never kept track, but I'm like the old Indian. So you might say the moon. He went by the moon.
Oh, you went by the moon?
No, I said the old Indian did.
Oh, the old
Indian? He didn't know the time. He said so many moons ago.
Oh, okay.
You know the old Indian saying?
Yeah.
That's why he didn't remember the time.
Uh-huh. Did you, you worked with, this is going back a little bit, Mr. Heisler, but did we finish talking about the lily pond up there? They're quite interested in that lily pond because they are repairing it and trying to put it back in the original good shape. And The county is quite interested in that, the Historical Association.
Yeah, I know, I see they are.
And, of course, you say you worked with your father on that. And what was your, just, what did you do with your father? What type of work?
He was a stone cutter. He came to the country and went and he learned his trade in Rochester.
Uh-huh.
And the marble cut statues and lettering gravestones and cutting monuments, see.
Yes, but who hired you to... how did they happen to decide to build a lily pond? Do you recall that?
No, I don't remember much about that. I knew all I knew is what I read in the paper. And I remember when they was talking about the stone and this stuff, because my dad cut it. See how I cut all that stone for that thing? All the stonework, he cut that.
He cut
and
it.
And I drawed the stone from Eagle Harbor Quarry, that white sandstone, if I remember right.
In what kind of a wagon?
A low platform it was, what you might call it, a low.
Yes.
And the wheel was higher, it was real low down, the bed of it, where you put the stone on, it was probably only about, 18 inches from the ground, see.
Uh-huh.
So they didn't have to lift the stone up to put it onto a high wagon. They couldn't do the heavy stuff, see.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they done that. And they had big pieces of stone they drew with that.
They would load your wagon, and then you'd have a team of horses.
Yeah, when I draw that stone for the lily pond.
Yes. Yeah. And your father, more or less,
he cut the stone into shape. He done all the stone cutting on that thing. He done it all.
Oh, yes. And also, you mentioned, the cupola at Mount Albion. There was some building or was it the chapel or what?
All I mentioned about the Catholic school and them columns they'd
cut. Oh, yes.
Them pillars, them round pillars in front of there.
The round pillars.
Yeah. Like
that must have been quite a skill.
Yeah, they're quite a piece of stone. That's all one chunk.
All one piece.
Yeah. All one piece of stone.
Mm-hmm.
Then I said before, he cut the stone for down to the school and he cut the cornerstone for down there because his box is, Ronnie Collins made a copper box. And to put a newspaper in, and all the men that worked there was, McGregor or somebody, I can't remember his name, that done the carpenter work, I think had charge of
him. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember that man's name, no.
That was in the cornerstone.
Yeah, that's for, you know, they all have a cornerstone.
Oh, yes.
And they put that in there, with all the people worked on it
at
the time, see, so
uh-huh.
In a copper box, so it wouldn't deteriorate.
I see, uh-huh. Well, I think we've... Is there anything else?
I can't think of anything else.
How about organizations that you belong to, Mr. Heisler? Have you got...
Mostly sportsmen clubs.
Mm-hmm. I didn't remember when it did any lodges or...
Oh, you didn't.
And then blown any lodges of any kind. Just fortune clubs like that.
I believe the Germans were some of the first people to come over here to this country as stone cutters, weren't they?
Well, Italians and Germans.
I see. When did the English people come?
Well, the English was in the quarry pretty strong. A lot of them went around the quarries when I was a kid. There was a lot of English. They made them street blocks,
yes.
Them square pieces.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
There wasn't any of them were stone cutters that I remember of.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Heisler, for your interview. It was very, very interesting, and I'm sure that
well, there's always something that I can think about later, but
I know. Well, if you think of something outstanding, will you let me know?
Yeah.
I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Okay.